And now, Bill Resnick and Susan Lin.
Susan Lin, welcome to KABU.
Oh, Bill, I'm happy to be talking with you.
Susan Lin is an American writer, a psychologist, therapist, and ventriloquist. She's an activist, founded the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. It's now called Fair Play. She's a research associate at Boston Children's Hospital, where she started as a puppet therapist and also made lots of appearances around the country, including on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. On top of that, she writes, including the book Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. Right now, she's working on a book on the impact of big tech and big business on children's values, their relationships, and their learning. It's coming out next year. Susan Lin, first tell us about how our corporate elites have been and are continuing in more sophisticated ways to take over the lives and interests of children.
Well, children today are inundated with corporate marketing. I mean, honestly, just about 24 hours a day. It has infiltrated the clothes that they wear, the toys that they play with. Marketing in schools has escalated. I mean, even during COVID, the whole ed tech industry has become more and more powerful in children's lives. It influences the food that they eat, but also it influences their values. The primary value that's embedded in all marketing is actually incredibly destructive, and that is materialism and consumption and the false notion that the things we buy will make us happy in some kind of sustained way.
I recall, Susan Lin, trying to talk to my granddaughter. She has lots of grandfathers. She is about 6 years old, and I have a lot of trouble sort of talking about things that are interesting to her in ways that are interesting to her. But anyway, I saw this kit she had. So I remarked, oh, those are such pretty colors. Your fingernails look really pretty. And she said to me, now we're talking about something interesting. I never thought I would be interesting about fingernail polish.
Yeah, and I imagine that you never thought that you would be talking to a six-year-old who is so concerned about what her nails look like. But that's another consequence of kids being targeted with marketing. And one of the things that marketers do is that they exploit children's developmental vulnerabilities. And one of the things that they exploit is children's natural inclination to want to be and older than they are and to aspire to be like older kids. And so how that translates in marketing is that, you know, marketers know that kids 4, 5, and 6 admire older kids who are, say, 12 or 13. And so they target 3- and 4-year-olds or 4- and 5-year-olds as if they were teens or preteens. They know that preteens and, you know, early teens want to be like older teens, and so they target them with products that are actually, you know, more appropriate for older teenagers. And so there's even a name for this in the marketing industry. The acronym is KGOY, Kids Are Getting Older, Younger. But what the industry doesn't acknowledge is that kids may be getting the trappings of older kids, but their development hasn't really caught up. So younger, like your 6-year-old grandchild, might wear nail polish or, you know, be sold sexualized clothing. But, you know, she doesn't have the emotional or the cognitive wherewithal to really understand what wearing that stuff means or the consequences of that. And one thing that happens that I think is really sad is that kids are jumping over middle childhood, which is, especially for girls, usually a really safe space where you know, they've got their basic skills, both physically and intellectually, they're not worrying or focusing about, you know, what their bodies look like. But that's, you know, changed.
A lot of that is done with a great deal of professional care, right? You know, this is not just trial and error, although a little bit of it is. But they've got all kinds of people working with them, focus groups, right? They publish papers, some of the academics, on what cells. I remember once I was on the Berkeley campus and at the Berkeley Sociology. This is unbelievable, actually. The seminar was on marketing candy. One of the great research universities in America, marketing candy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've gone to conferences, including conferences at major universities, about marketing to children, how to do it and the research behind it.
You're sort of just an observer critiquing it, I gather. They didn't.
Right.
They didn't invite you as a major speaker, I don't suppose.
No. You know, one of the most egregious studies, I was just looking back on this. I wrote about it in Consuming Kids, but it was a study done way back in 1998 that still has resonance today, and it was a study on nagging. It wasn't to help parents cope with nagging. It was a study to help corporations help children nag more effectively. It's called the nag factor.
Helping children nag more effectively.
Yeah.
of their parents who buy things for
yes.
them, I gather. There's so many horrible things. I mean, the horrible consequences of corporate invasion of childhood. Another one of my memories, which was pre-TV, this one, as kids, and I had a younger brother, we would play on the sofa and in the living room. I don't know what parents said. As long as we were out of their hair, they were happy. We would play with the cushions and stuff, and we'd build forts and put sheets on things and, you know, play with empty boxes. You know, you see kids in playgrounds and sandboxes curiously dealing with the materials and digging up and all the rest. And much of that now is they've sort of fashioned toys and materials and even like Legos. Although Legos seem to me to have some virtue, kids to play with blocks. When you have the materials, it's a little different than just getting the whole thing made and you have so many options. I'm not sure about that. What's your sense of that?
Well, I think that, you know, the original tub of Lego blocks was an incredibly creative toy, really wonderful toy. But like a lot of corporations, I think that the powers that be at Lego got greedy. And so, you know, now it's hard to find that original box of Legos, and kids are marketed kits, and their kits linked to other media properties. But it's not only that. Lego has apps for kids now. So on a phone, you can play with Lego apps. And I was at a marketing conference once where this guy said he thought it was so wonderful about the Lego apps, because you can't take a bag of bricks everywhere, but you could take the Lego app everywhere you go. And I just couldn't believe that he thought it was wonderful that kids were taking their devices everywhere and playing with them to the exclusion of engaging in the rest of the world and doing the kind of hands-on play that is so crucial to their development.
This is Bill Resnick talking to Susan Lin. She's an American writer, also an activist, founded the campaign for a commercial free of childhood, now called Fair Play. She's also a psychologist, a therapist, working with children and their parents, using puppets as a ventriloquist puppeteer. She's also made many appearances around the world, including on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. On top of all that, she writes, including the book Consuming Kids, The Hostile Takeover of Childhood. And she's working on a book on the impact of big tech and big business on children's values, their relationships, their learning. We've just talked about that. it's quite fascinating, and I'm sure your first consuming kids, as well as the one that's coming out, has probably wonderful stories. We've had a few of them already about marketing to children, a few of them on the air today. Susan, you called it a hostile takeover. The title was Consuming Kids, the Hostile Takeover of Childhood. I guess you called it hostile because people are fighting back, maybe even children. I wonder if there's some kind of child's movement that's in some ways challenging the corporate apparatus.
Yeah, that's complicated. I called it the hostile takeover because the children weren't asking for it or have no say in it. I think it's a little dangerous is too strong a word, but it makes me uncomfortable to talk about getting kids to resist marketing because it's like blaming the victim. I mean, adults, including myself, are phenomenally vulnerable to advertising. I mean, there's, you know, tons of studies showing that. How can we expect children to resist it, especially when, as we, you know, alluded to before, corporations work with child psychologists to exploit all aspects of children's developmental vulnerabilities. So as kids get to be teenagers, it's more likely that they could stand up to corporate marketing, and some do. But we have to remember that the frontal cortex, which is where judgment sits, doesn't fully develop until the late 20s. So teenagers are incredibly vulnerable to marketing as well.
Parents, though, really can have an influence, right? And I think many parents are trying, especially now with, of course, climate change as such a threat to their lives and children, and will, in fact, require us to be doing a whole lot less consuming of almost everything, because everything that we consume leads to more greenhouse gas emissions. It's sort of seeing a different form of life with much less consuming, even much less travel. But, you know, as Thoreau said, I've traveled widely in Cambridge. You can travel very widely without ever getting out of a library. It seems to me the very different lives are going to have to be led by most of the, especially the consuming classes of the world. Tell us how parents are dealing with kids to try and counter corporate values and the urge to consumption and the urge to look older and all the rest of it.
Yes, I will talk about things that parents can do, but one thing that it's really important for people to understand is that one family in isolation can't combat a multi-billion-dollar industry that is working day and night to undermine parents' best efforts. And we need to keep that front and center. That's why I started, you know, Campaign for Commercial-Free Childhood, because it seemed, you know, to me that we really needed an activist organization to take on corporate marketing to kids. I left what was then CCFC and is now Fair Play in 2015, and I'm just incredibly proud of the work that that organization is continuing to do. So one thing that parents can do is, you know, go to the Fair Play website. It's fairplayforkids.org. And join with other parents who are fighting back and who are finding ways of working together to affect changes. So that said, there are some things that parents can do. And one thing is, especially, you know, for parents about to have babies or who have infants, one thing is not to rush to put them in front of screens, because the primary goal of most screen content is to sell us something. That, you know, that's not true for everything, but it's true for a lot of things. And immersing kids in infancy and early childhood in apps and video games and the television programs that are now streaming on our devices, what that does is set kids up to become consumers. And it also deprives them of the kind of hands-on creative play that is so critical to their learning and to creativity and constructive problem solving. So one thing that parents can do is to make sure that their children have as much time as possible playing outside, if that's possible, and engaged with commercial-free hands-on toys and objects. The way that even, you know, tech companies, one of the primary ways that they market to kids is to get kids to fall in love with media characters. For instance, you know, take Elmo, who is certainly a fun character, but if a child, you know, sees Elmo on television and plays Elmo games and has lots and lots of Elmo clothes and paraphernalia, Elmo does become incredibly important to them. And so it's a way that corporations capture the hearts and minds of children. And then what happens is that parents see that their children like Elmo, and so they start buying their kids more and more Elmo things, instead of giving them, you know, opportunities to create their own characters or to explore the world with hands-on play and, you know, creativity.
I'm really not familiar with Elmo.
Elmo is from Sesame Street.
My sense is that some of those great characters actually embody human values. They embody sort of sharing, trying to respect others, controlling your bad feelings, and being decent to others. Like, parents can promote group decision making in their own families, actually. Kids get older, they have a capacity to think about things and make judgments. You can be an authoritative parent and not an authoritarian parent. And you can have actually really democratic discussions and make decisions that way. And as long as they aren't really dangerous, maybe the kids have a really important part of decision making. It seems to me that in order to get kids interested, like around Elmo, they have to present Elmo as a lovable character, and as a lovable character with these lovable, really decent values. It's a sort of contradiction in their practice, so that even though they're training the kids in consumption and pleasure through buying things and fun through going to Disneyland, it seems to me that there are possibilities of maintaining values in that world.
Yeah, I mean, it would be incredibly hypocritical of me to just all out criticize children's media. I worked in television. I am so grateful to have had the opportunity to be on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I created videotapes for children about all kinds of difficult issues. The problem is not inherent in Elmo, the puppet, or the character. The problem is inherent in the business model that children's media relies on. And that is, there's not, you know, national funding for children's media. And so it ends up being a lot, if not for some companies, all about making money. And so the problem is not with the values embedded in Elmo. The problem is the values embedded in targeting kids with marketing, and the fact that characters like Elmo or, you know, Dora the Explorer, you know, these, you know, lovely characters are tools for selling kids stuff. That's what the problem is. And, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned global warming before, because, you know, if we're going to deal with global warming, we have to do something to limit consumption. And the values of consumption are embedded in children from early childhood, and they come these days from the tech and entertainment industries, the toy industry, the food industry, you know, all of those industries.
Susan Lynn, we're going to have to sign off. Examine consuming kids, the hostile takeover of childhood. Susan Lynn, my hope is that at some point kids rebel, as you pointed out, some teenagers rebel against the need to really change our lives immensely for the consuming classes because of global roasting, making the planet uninhabitable. It was only 118 degrees in Portland a couple of days ago.
How about that?
There's going to be a reckoning to corporate culture and corporate values and the behavior of growth at all cost industries. I hope that at some point I think people are going to realize to save their lives, they will recognize that they really have to root out those values and critique them and find other ways of loving that are much more fulfilling. So, Susan, your work is very important. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking with you, Bill.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
And you too.
I remember.